The dragon enlisted the help of the Roman Empire to make war with the offspring of the woman in Revelation chapter 12. The Roman Empire, in the spirit, looked much like the dragon, who is the devil. The dragon has 7 heads, 10 horns, and 7 diadems on his heads. The Roman Empire has 7 heads, 10 horns, and on his horns, 10 crowns. We observe this morning that the Roman Empire came up out of the sea of the peoples. In particular, a mixture of the Babylonian, the Medo-Persian, and the Grecian empires. The sea beast of the Roman Empire could make war with the saints and sadly overcome them. Now, this dreadful sea beast was joined by another beast, as though the first one was not enough. The second beast helped the first one in a unique way. Watch now what happens as we continue in Revelation 13. Verse 11 says this: "Then I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and he had 2 horns like a lamb and spoke like a dragon." A beast from the earth joined the sea beast. Now I want you to notice something here. Look carefully at verse 11. "Then I saw another beast." What's interesting about this is that the Greek language of the New Testament had 2 words for our one word, another. One word meant another of a different kind. You know, another of a different kind entirely. The other word, which is the word used here, means another of the same kind. Another of the same kind. This is crucial for understanding history and how it corresponds with the symbolism in the book of Revelation. So in other words, the second beast is like the first beast. They are very similar. They're different. And you will see some differences, but they are very similar. And in fact, they work together. Interestingly, the second beast, the earth beast, had 2 horns like a lamb. The earth beast, while dreadful, was not as ferocious as the sea beast, but he was innocent looking, like a lamb. This beast only had 2 horns instead of the 10, like the sea beast, because his horns do not represent certain individuals, but perhaps offices. However, this beast does not speak like a lamb. Now, he may have some appearances that make him look like a lamb, but he speaks like a dragon. John says, "Do not be fooled. He looks this way, but actually he is something else. He may look innocent, but he is not. He may look harmful, but he is just as intent on destroying you as that first one." And the way to discern would be by listening to what he said or what he taught. Of course, that's how we discern much of anything or anyone. His speaking was just like the dragon, and the dragon is Satan. Satan, as you know, tries to appear as innocent and religious. Jesus even told us that he will come to us through his various agents in sheep's clothing. But inwardly, he will be like a ravenous wolf. Or like in the passage from which Caleb just read. He can transform himself into an apostle of Christ. In other words, you can actually think that he, or one of his agents, is an ambassador of Jesus Christ himself. Paul there in 2 Corinthians 11 even went so far as to say that he can make himself look like an angel of light. And that is some of what he's doing here in Revelation 13. He's using this earth beast with the lamb-like appearance, harmless and innocent, and yet underneath the lamb's clothing is a fiery red dragon out to destroy God's people. Now, verses 12 through 17 show us the work of the earth beast. Let's break it down. Verse 12. And he exercises all the authority of the first beast in his appearance, or in his presence, excuse me, and causes the earth and those who dwell in it to worship the first beast, whose deadly wound was healed. His authority was exercised in the presence of the sea beast, so that the earth beast was related to the Roman Empire and was contemporary with it. What is said in verse 2 that we observed this morning, that the sea beast had power, a throne, and great authority, could also be said about the earth beast. He had awesome power. He had the throne. And he had great authority. It could also be said that the earth beast, therefore, received his authority from the dragon or the devil. The earth beast had authority to continue for 42 months because, according to verse 5, the sea beast had authority to continue for 42 months. The authority of the sea beast and the authority of the earth beast work together. So even as the sea beast had authority over every tribe, tongue, and nation, so the earth beast had authority over every tribe, nation, and tongue. The earth beast caused worship of the sea beast. Now, interestingly, here in verse 12, John mentioned the deadly wound of that first beast, the sea beast. I think this is interesting. It's mentioned here because, or I'm asking, is this mentioned here because the earth beast was used to help revive the sea beast from his seeming death blow? Or is it that after the death blow and then recovery, that's when the earth beast appeared? I think it's the latter, the way it's written. In other words, it's not as though the two existed together. The sea beast receives a death blow, but the earth beast helps him to recover. No. You have the sea beast for a while by himself. He receives the death blow, recovers from it, and then the earth beast comes up. And he takes advantage of what appears to be, what we might even say, you know, in a loose way, a miraculous recovery. In other words, the Roman Empire was taking advantage of the world, marveling and following after it, which the Roman Empire converted into emperor worship. There was not the worship before, but now it happens afterwards. Okay, so look at verses 13 and 14. He performs great signs so that he even makes fire come down from heaven on the earth in the sight of men. And he deceives those who dwell on the earth by those signs which he was granted to do in the sight of the beast, telling those who dwell on the earth to make an image to the beast, who was wounded by the sword and lived. He performed great signs. Excuse me. So his deception was powerful. The earth beast was a religious power used by the Roman Empire to encourage emperor worship. He deceived with his signs. And the ones he deceived are those who dwell on the earth. He was granted to do these signs in the presence of the sea beast so that people were deceived into making an image, a form of idolatry to the sea beast. In other words, again, it's showing that the sea beast was being worshipped. Again, a picture, I believe, of emperor worship. The sea beast had been wounded, but lived, which convinced the people we ought to make an image. An image ought to be made to the magnificent sea beast. An image honoring the Roman Empire. Now, look in verses 15 to 17 how these two beasts treat their opposition. He was granted power to give breath to the image of the beast, that the image of the beast should both speak and cause as many as would not worship the image of the beast to be killed. He causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and slave, to receive a mark on their right hand or on their foreheads, and that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. The earth beast received power to give breath to the image of the sea beast. The earth beast continued his deceptive signs by making it appear that this image was alive, which just further enhanced the godlike appearance of that first beast. And so people wondered even more, filled with wonder, as they looked at the great beast. The image of the beast also caused as many as would not worship his image to be killed. This was serious business. He was intolerant. And this is precisely what happened in the Roman Empire. Like the three world powers that preceded it, they did not tolerate worship of any gods besides the ones they authorized. Do you remember why Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego ended up in that fiery furnace? Because they refused to worship the image, the only image that was authorized by the Babylonian Empire. Why did Daniel end up in the lion's den? It was because he refused to worship or to pray to either the emperor of the Medo-Persian Empire or to his God. And why is it that the Greeks persecuted the Jews so severely once the Greeks came into power? Same thing. Because the Jews would only worship Jehovah God. Excuse me. And they suffered horribly at the hands of the Greeks for that. And the Roman Empire, with the church, continued that tradition. Oh, you can have religion, but only the one we authorize. If you don't, you're dead. Many Christians, listen, brethren, many of our brothers and sisters whom we hope to meet someday paid with their lives for refusing to comply with the Roman Empire in its worship, they paid severely. Now, it also said that the second beast caused everyone to receive a mark, either on the right hand or on the forehead. This was a mark of compromise. This is a sign that you have compromised with the beast and have denied your God, whatever your God might be. And of course, in this case, we're talking about the God and Father, Jesus Christ. Now, this was not necessarily a visible mark, no more so than its a mark that was in opposition to it, and that's the mark of God. Remember, we saw that in Revelation chapter 3 and verse 12, where Jesus promises that if we overcome, He will write on us. He'll write on us the name of His God. And in fact, He said, I'll write on you my own new name. And then in Revelation 7 and verse 3, it was said, do not harm the earth, the sea, or the trees till we have sealed the servants of our God on their foreheads. So in other words, Christians during the first few centuries did not have God's name written on their foreheads. They did not have the seal of God on their foreheads revealed in 2 Timothy chapter 2 that the Lord knows those who are His. But that's just simply saying, yes, I know who you are. You have a mark on you, so to speak. And it's the same way with the beast. And incidentally, John will show more about the mark of God when we get into the next chapter. And this is what I think is so fascinating. And I'm going to say this again when we get into chapter 14. The mark of God is mentioned more than one time, more than two times in the book of Revelation. And it's mentioned in Daniel or Ezekiel. I showed that to you when I was in the earlier parts of Revelation. It's mentioned several times, but most people are not consumed with having God's mark. They're consumed with, oh man, do I have the mark of the beast? Or what is the mark of the beast? You work on following the Lord, and He'll put His mark on you, and you don't have to worry whether you have the mark of this beast or of some other. Now watch verse 18. Here is wisdom. Let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast. For it is the number of a man. His number is 666. Why did John introduce this number and the calculation of it by saying, here is wisdom? It takes wisdom because it is not obvious. I don't need any wisdom to see that, well, the number is 6666, but there's three sixes there. Or you could say 666. What kind of wisdom does that take? It's there. If the number was literally, you know, a six and then a six and a six that was literally on the body, what need would there be for wisdom in doing the calculation? Let the understanding people calculate the number of the beast. This is saying to us, consider the meaning of the number. This is telling us that the number had a spiritual meaning behind it. Now let me ask you this question. And I think this is really crucial for understanding this number also. Is this a number that the beast ascribed to himself? Or is it a number that God ascribed to the beast? If it's a number that the beast ascribed to himself, then the text is telling us this is something that he uses. On the other hand, if this is a number that God ascribed to the beast, God is telling us something. God is telling us about the nature of the beast. My personal opinion is that it's the latter of those two. I think this is a number that God has ascribed to the beast. For what book are we in? This is called the book of Revelation. Revelation is a revealing. God is telling us, I want to reveal some things to you. You see this God-like empire. You see its awesome power, and it's going to grow. From the time that John wrote this, its power is going to grow and become even mightier. But I want to tell you something. His number is only 666. Now, I'm going to make this next sentence, I'm going to word it very carefully. I'm not going to make a mistake in it. And it's written in the handouts if you have them. John wrote that it is the number of man. Now, please notice that I did not say it is the number of a man, which is commonly the way we look at it. And I know in probably all of our translations, you have that little tiny one-letter word there, A, before man. Let me tell you something. You know, I don't try to refer to the Greek very much because, well, most of you wouldn't be able to say, okay, here's the Greek Testament, and I'll read it and show where Don's wrong at that point. And I understand that. But let me just tell you a simple rule here, and then we can go from there. Or not a simple rule, but just a simple fact about the Greek. Interestingly, the ancient Greek did not have the indefinite article. The indefinite article is that little word, a. Whereas the definite article is the. How they understood one another, I don't know. They just knew how they thought. It didn't have a. And yet, all the time, we have A in here. For example, back in verse 1 that we looked at this morning, look at that there. It says, then I stood on the sand of the sea, and I saw a beast rising up out of the sea. Okay, so we have the word A there. But in the original text, A is not there. The translator supplied it because that makes sense to us in English. That's how we think. Sometimes it's necessary to supply that indefinite article because that's just how we are with our language. That's how we think. But it's not always necessary. How then did the translators know? Well, they had to do some interpretation. They were not only translators, like I use the New King James translation. They're not only translators, but they're also interpreters. They just have to do that sometimes. And that's what's going on here. In my estimation, it is not necessary in this case to supply that indefinite article. In fact, literally, the way it reads in the Greek text, look there at verse 18. Here is wisdom, let him who has understanding calculate the number of the beast. Now, starting with 4, it is the number of a man. That part right there, here is literally how it reads in the Greek text. If you just took the Greek words, gave them their English translation without mixing them up to make it smooth in English for us, here's literally how it would read. For number of man it is. When the Greek Christians read this in the first century, that's how they read it. For number of man it is. And the number is 666. Now, if you sit down in one reading, and I'd encourage you to do this, start at Revelation 1:1 And at one reading, read all the way up to Revelation 13, verse 18. And here's what you're going to find. The number 7, frequently. And I've pointed that out to you already. Up to this point, the number 7 has been repeatedly. And there's going to be more. We're not done with 7 yet. But so far, we have seen 7 churches, 7 spirits, 7 lampstands, 7 stars, 7 lamps of fire, 7 seals, 7 horns, 7 eyes, 7 angels, 7 trumpets, 7 thunders, 7,000 killed, 7 diadems, and 7 heads. 7, 7, 7. It's almost like we got a cadence going down now. 7. There's 7 of this, 7 of that, 7 of this, 7 of that, 7 of this, 7 of that. 6, 6, 6. All of a sudden, something has happened. 6. That disrupted the pattern. 6 again. 6. The pattern, something's wrong. It makes us stumble. We had a cadence going here. 7 churches, 7 spirits, 7 lampstands, 6. Well, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't fit the cadence. 666 is like trying to start your car. 666, you know, and it won't fire. You can't get it to go. 7. Most of the time in the book of Revelation refers to God and His work. I would say 99% of the time. Now, at least one exception that I can think of right now is what I've already covered today. The fact that the dragon or this beast here had 7 heads. But other than that, 7 is always with God. 6. Even tripled, okay, you have the first one, and then you try it again, and you try it again, is very close to 7. But it's not quite there. Man is 6. He is just a little lower than God, as Psalm 8, I believe it is, testifies, and as well as the book of Hebrews. Man was made in the image of God, but man is not God. Now, man's not 1, and he's not 2, 3, or 4, or even 5. No, he's closer to God than that. Man, who was made on the 6th day, is very close to God. But he is not God, regardless of what man tries. Even tripling his efforts, even tripling the ferocious animals that he wants to use, such as a leopard, a bear, and a lion, verses 1 through 10, while that makes him great, he has great authority and power and a throne, he still is not God. He still comes up short. He still is insufficient. Therefore, emperor worship was false, as is worship of any man or anything or any self. The sea beast, regardless of his awesome and terrible power, was not worthy of worship. It's like God is giving us, or especially our early brethren, a key here. Listen, you can see what this beast does, and he'll do some things that appear to be miraculous that might make you think he's God, but he's not. He's just 666. The beast was not a literal animal, of course. He represented the Roman Empire. Nor would it be Satan in the flesh. But it was man. In the fullness of his evil power. Of course, working in association with the devil. As manifested in various ways, and in this particular context, the Roman Empire. The beast was not God, contrary to all the claims of these two beasts. I think this number coming at the end of this chapter, talking about these two beasts, is a perfect placement. Look what these beasts are doing and saying about themselves or about each other, or at least the second one about the first one, and they're not God. Regardless of what they say and do, contrary to all their claims, The beast is not a god. Regardless of the jaw-dropping power of man, be careful not to think or to work as though the government or any agency of man is God. Whether it was them with the Roman Empire or any other powerful government that arises out of the sea of the masses of the people. Think in our nation about how much power we ascribe to the government. I love the United States of America, but she is not God. We need to be really careful in our nation about what we ascribe to our country, which is so powerful, as you know. No man or group of people are even close to being God. Revelation 13 shows there are only two sides in this conflict. No one besides the dragon and God was standing on the sidelines. You are either for Christ or against Him. If you are for Him, you are of the woman that we read about in chapter 12. If you are not for Christ, you are against Him and on the side of any beast that arises in history. As Jesus Himself once said, "He who is not with me is against me, and he who does not gather with me scatters." Brethren, do we believe that a beast like the Roman Empire could never arise again? Christians in other countries are suffering horribly. And Satan works right here in America. And saints right here in America who refuse to bow before the beast of the world in his various manifestations are persecuted. There's a beast of secularism that's arising in our society. You need to be listening very carefully to what the secular forces are attempting to do, not so much to religion in America, but to Christianity in particular. It's fascinating to see how quickly they'll embrace Islam or Buddhism or Hinduism, but then their abhorrence of Christianity. Someone once said, "It is amazing what people will believe so long as it is not in the Bible," and how true that is. We need to be aware of the beast of secularism. But you know, sometimes, brethren, we are so consumed with what the government is doing, what the cable company is doing with prices, what gas prices are, our bodily health, traffic, people moving into the area, the war in Iraq, etc., and other things of the flesh, that we don't even notice there's a secularistic beast that's arising. I mean, we get announcements from the news itself all the time of what it's doing. Listen to the news, read the newspaper, open up a news magazine. You can see the beast of secularism growing stronger every week, I think. Brethren, let us wake up by being consumed with what God is consumed. There is a great fiery red dragon who will use anything or anyone to destroy us. And God knows this, of course. That's why He's written the book of Revelation. Be aware of these things. And don't let your heart and your mind go over to that evil and dark side. And do you want our prayers? We would love to pray for you. We love to pray, don't we? I hear prayer requests all the time. And as you know, recently my stepmother, with having her major surgery, so many people have asked me about her, and I really appreciate that. And all the prayers you've offered. And we hear that all the time. People say, "Thank you for praying." Well, we love to pray. So can we pray for you? Do you need to be rededicated? Can we pour out our hearts before the throne of God on your behalf? If so, please come forward right now as we stand and sing.